future.
And you're on CGLO, 1690 AM. This is Tales of Entomology, where most weeks Martin and I talk to you about insects and history. My name is Lucy, and I'm a medieval historian.
And I'm Martin, the guy you ask about bugs until you can find an actual expert. And now, cue the... Oh, horrible.
Hello, playmates. And now, for no reason at all, I'm going to sing you a little song that made me famous. The song that I made famous. Well, anyway, one of us is very good, and I entitle it The Bee. Oh, what a glorious thing to be, a healthy, grown-up, busy, busy bee, whiling away the passing hours, pinching all the pollen from the cauliflowers.
Okay, that's enough. All right, so today we're going to talk about bees, obviously.
So, Martin, what's the bee's favorite music band?
Gosh, Lucy, I don't know.
The Bee Gees.
Oh, that's good.
Okay, and I have another one. What's the bee's favorite singer?
I don't know.
Sting.
That's good. I should have known. Gosh, you're on a roll there.
All right, so dad jokes aside, there will be more dad jokes today. I did a little research last night. So we all love the bees' honey, and we're all afraid that the bees might disappear. But first, what is a bee, Martin?
What an appropriate question, Lucy. So bees are tiny, cute, and fuzzy, have yellow and black stripes. They live in hives with a queen. They dance to give directions, eat pollen and nectar, make honey for your enjoyment, and die when they sting you. And there's only one species of bee.
That doesn't sound right. Martin, are you trying to mess with our listeners?
Oh, gosh, Lucy, you got me. I lied.
God. Oh, no.
At least partially. What I described was actually just one species of bee, the European honeybee, or otherwise known as the Western honeybee. That's the one that most of us know and where most of our honey is from. But it isn't, like I said, it's only one species, and there are actually over 20,000 species of bee. And they're not all fuzzy, but they're still all cute. They come in many colors and patterns. Some are solitary, and most of them don't dance.
And they don't all make honey. A few actually prefer to eat rotting flesh over pollen and nectar. And they don't all die when they sting you. In fact, some don't even sting.
Right. And an extra fact, free of charge, no male bee of any species has a sting. The sting is actually a modified ovipositor, or ovipositor, I'm not quite sure, which is a tube that comes out of a female insect's, get it, behind.
All right.
The ovipositor, as the name suggests, is an egg positioner. So for many species of insects, such as parasitoid wasps, it's used to pierce through the epidermis or skin of a plant or an animal. And then they insert the eggs through the tube, and the eggs grow and exit the animal, and it's horrible. At some point, a common ancestor of bees evolved a modified ovipositor that was only used for defensive purposes, and they evolved another opening in the abdomen to lay eggs.
Which is very cool, I guess, and fascinating. So while all bees play an important role for humans through pollination, only a few species have caused significant ripples throughout human history.
Which is to say, the ones that make honey, or the honeybees.
Long before humans started beekeeping, they gathered wild honey and wax from natural beehives. Evidence of beeswax has been detected in Anatolian pottery nearly 9,000 years ago. And Anatolia is a region that encompasses much of what today we call Turkey.
There are also rock paintings in Spain that depict honey hunters suspended from rope ladders as they harvest sections of honeycomb. These paintings are thought to date back 7 to 8,000 years.
Similar rock paintings from pretty much the same period of time were found in Australia, in South Africa, and in India. And they all depict people who are collecting wild honey. So in a human-centered historical perspective, what we call true beekeeping is when humans build artificial hives for bees in order to for them to produce and for us to gather honey and wax.
The oldest living evidence of human beekeeping comes from ancient Egypt and dates back to the 3rd millennium before the Common Era. A relief from the Sun Temple near the Great Pyramid of Giza shows beekeepers working hives, processing honey, and sealing honey in containers for storage. The relief shows that beekeeping was a well-established occupation that began or was introduced in Egypt earlier on.
And on the other side of the world, in the Americas, evidence of human beekeeping is more recent, but sources lack to actually document very ancient practices. Discoveries of human-made beehives from the Maya late preclastic period, that is from the 4th century before the Common Era, offer the oldest evidence of beekeeping in Mesoamerica. But the Maya bees were different from the European or the Egyptian bees.
As we mentioned earlier, there are several different species of bee, some who make honey and some who don't. If you're one of our regular listeners, or maybe just the one.
Hi, Andre.
Then you've probably heard one of our great quotes from one natural philosopher or another from antiquity and the Middle Ages. That's because Lucy loves to scrounge around ancient texts in search of these quotes, and today is no exception.
Indeed, Albert the Great, which is our 13th century BFF, says that in his book De Animalibus, there are three species of honey-producing bees, and we are going to test Martin's abilities at entomology. So Albert writes, one type of bee is shaggy like a fur-bearing animal and is known to be vicious and easily provoked. This one is called the country bee. So Martin, can you guess which bee Albert is talking about?
Well, and this is totally spontaneous and not researched at all.
Yes.
The country bit suggests to me that it's not a domesticated bee. And then because he's saying it's shaggy, I want to say a bumblebee. Or as I called it growing up, un bourdon. Those are the big fuzzy ones. Yeah, we all know what they are. So I was never attacked by one, but I was always on the fence about whether or not I should be afraid of them. I remember hearing many conflicting accounts by kids who said they either have no stingers and are extremely friendly, or that they are super aggressive, or even that they bite you. And some people would confuse them with honeybees, which of course they aren't.
Well, they do in fact have stingers. But they will mostly only attack you if they are provoked or if they feel threatened. They don't swarm like honeybees do, and their stingers are not barbed, meaning that they can sting you several times. Talking about furry bees, Martin, quick question. What do bees style their hair with?
Well, gosh, Lucy.
Another dad joke. It's with a honeycomb.
No way. Okay. Another fact about bumblebees is that there are not just one species of bumblebee, but there are 250 species of bumblebee. Oh, and also they have smaller colonies than, let's say, bees. So they have, well, I mean, honeybees. They have maybe 50 to 500 individuals per colony. And they do make honey, as Albertus said, but not as much as honeybees, not in any quantities that could be economically viable for humans anyway. There are probably some people who do it, who like bumblebee honey, but I couldn't find anything conclusive about it. Okay, Lucy, so what's the next bee on Albert's list?
This one is more difficult. On the second type of honey-making bee, Albert tells that it has a long, slender shape, but is not noted for the quality of its honey.
Right. Well, that is pretty vague, and it wasn't easy to pin down, but my research leads me to think that it might be one of the 500 species of carpenter bee. And these aren't what you normally think of as bee. I don't even think you'd call them a bee if you, or recognize them as a bee if you saw them. As the name suggests, these guys burrow in wood. They're typically solitary, though you might have mother-daughter teams cohabiting. They're recognizable for their shiny black bodies, and they only produce enough honey for their young, so obviously not enough for us to eat.
And they don't make furniture.
No.
So the carpenter bee, it's as good, I guess, as any. I'm sorry, I'm tired. And for the last honey-making bee, Albert described them with a lot of enthusiasm. The third has a compact, well-rounded, cylindrical shape and is not overly long. This species is a superior bee and has a prodigious output of honey.
Well, so the phone is lighting up with callers that want to give the answer to this. But the answer, as
surprise,
yes, is so it's the honeybee, or so the common Western honeybee, or Apis mellifera. Apis or Apis, I don't know how to say it, means bee, and mellifera means honey. It's the domesticated honeybee we raise in man-made hives to collect our honey.
Being German and living in the Middle Ages, Albert the Great had a very Europeo-centric perspective on bees. But many more species across the globe produce honey. Apiculture, from the Latin term apis meaning bee, has been practiced and developed independently in many places throughout the world and throughout history. And that's because there are several different species that can produce honey.
Right. According to our sources, there are 7 to 11 recognized species of honeybee that are part of the Apis genus. They fit into three broad groups. Yeah, we have a little bit of time.
Okay.
Just say one.
So there are, for instance, the cavity nesting species, which include the Western honeybee, which is native to Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. And you also have other cavity dwellers as far east as Southeastern Asia and the Philippines, though none are native to the Americas. Unless they live in man-made hives, they look for any cavity in a rock or in a tree.
And then you also have two species of dwarf honeybees in Asia. They're about the size of a housefly and attach their small circular combs to the branch of a tree or shrub. And there are also giant bees, which go up to 2 centimeters long, that live in the Himalayas, in Indonesia, and elsewhere in southern Asia. They build exposed combs on the tippy tops of trees, on cliffs, and on buildings. And they're apparently pretty aggressive, so you don't want to be careless around a colony.
And so there weren't any native species of what we called true honeybees in the Americas. But as we said earlier, the Maya did do some beekeeping and bee harvesting. In their case, we would not call that apiculture, but meliponiculture, because the species of bee they used was called Melipona becae. Translated in English, the name is the regal lady bees, as the Maya called them, and they are stingless cavity nesting bees.
Exactly. And on that note, here's an ad.
At midnight, right here on 1690 AM CJLO. Learn more online at floydianslip.com.
Maybe one day I'll figure out how to work the machine correctly. Okay, so how do bees make honey and wax is what we're going to talk about now. As always, Lucy has found an antique and medieval author with an opinion on the subject.
Yes, and they always have very interesting opinions. So first, it's Pliny the Elder, who is a Roman philosopher from the first century of the Common Era. He only had a very vague idea of how bees make honey. So I'm reading the quote. "Honey comes out of the air. In falling from the great height, it accumulates dirt and is stained with the vapor of the earth. It becomes purified after the bees collect it and allow it to ferment in the hive." What is clear is that Pliny did not spend a great deal of time looking at bees.
And our favorite 13th century author, Albert the Great, had compiled more knowledge on the topic, but, well, you'll see. A third type of bee gathers honey from dewy moistures and waxes from the flowers. When dew falls upon the flowers, the sun causes the more subtle portion of the moisture to evaporate, but the remainder distills a drop at a time and trickles down to the base of the flower, seeking this nectar. The bees thrust their heads into the bottom of the blossoms. The earthy component that remains after evaporation of the moisture is the wax. The bee smears this on its shanks and collects the honey in its mouth, then carries both materials back to the hive.
Albert then elaborates. Beeswax is a component of the nectar that starts to evaporate and makes honey. It is kind of a repository for honey. So when all moisture evaporates, you only get beeswax. If you feel a bit lost, it's fine. It's often what you get when you read medieval science. You're unsure of what you actually understand from it, but you loved it. Or maybe it's just me.
Possibly just you. So Al, that's not. I love it. So Albert and most medieval authors contended that bees collect honey and wax directly from the flowers, which they brought to their hive. There they built combs with the wax and stored honey.
The ways in which different species of bees make honey actually vary. So for the sake of brevity, we'll stick to the Western honeybee. In a typical beehive, let's say with around 60,000 bees, female foragers will make endless trips, visiting about 100 flowers a trip to gather nectar in their mouth.
The nectar mixes with an enzyme in their mouth. They call it the bee enzyme, which slowly turns the nectar to honey. And then they pass that nectar from one bee mouth to the other, and that increases the whole process. They eventually drop the mix in a hexagon-shaped cell made out of wax, which is the honeycomb. The bees congregate around the cells. They fan their wings and evaporate excess water. And the bees know when the honey is ready, and then they cap the cells with a wax lid. And that's when the beekeeper comes and steals all their hard work.
And in case you were wondering how bees made the wax. So the glands of worker bees actually convert honey into wax, which oozes through the bees' pores. This collects in tiny flakes on their abdomens. They then chew the flakes until they can mold them into honeycombs for storing honey and also larvae.
I think that's pretty cool.
It is cool. It's, you know, gross on the side, but they are cute.
It might seem pretty unfair for a human to come and take the honey after all that work, considering that it takes about 550 bees visiting 2 million flowers to make 1 pound of honey. But because beekeepers provide a nice, comfy, and protective artificial hive, as opposed to having to build one from scratch in a cave or a rock cavity or a hollow tree, domesticated bees can spend less time defending and maintaining the hive and more time producing honey, meaning they have enough left to eat even after humans have taken their share.
So let's talk about these hives a human make. It's pretty impressive that thousands of years ago, people kind of just sat there and tried to figure out how to make a home that bees would prefer over what they naturally evolved to use.
Right. The hives used by the ancient Egyptians were horizontal. They're depicted in reliefs dated from the second millennium before Common Era. They were made of dried mud and straw and stacked one on top of the other.
Egyptian apiculture was a state-organized occupation, and honey was a very important commodity for trade, food, and medicinal ingredients. Beeswax played a large part of magical and religious rituals, and it would also later, like in Christianity. It was also used in cosmetics and for waterproofing boats.
The oldest known archaeological remains of human-made beehives come from modern Israel. They date from the 9th century before Common Era. They look pretty much like the Egyptian beehives we just mentioned, horizontal and made of mud and straw.
The next development in beekeeping comes from the 4th century before the Common Era in Greece. At that point, beehives were then in a conic shape and made in pottery. The interior of the cone was scrapped so that bees could affix their combs. A pottery lid was then added to close the hive that could be removed by beekeepers.
Beekeeping became widespread in the Middle East, in Asia, in North Africa, and in Europe in the following centuries. A large number of types of beehives were attested during that period, so some made of clay, some made of wicker, some of wood and bark. Their shapes varied. There were horizontal hives, tubular hives, basket-shaped hives, vertical conic hives, you name it.
A number of authors debated the pros and cons of this type of hive or that type of hive, the impact of weather on the hive, how to obtain a better quality of honey and wax, or a better quantity of honey and wax. So when we talk about a beehive, we picture a swarm of bees working relentlessly. And at the center of the hive, there is this larger bee, the queen, laying eggs to produce more and more worker bees.
Right. And there's not much to debunk here. That is pretty accurate. As far as the Western honeybee goes, in any case, like we said, there are solitary bees. But we don't really deal with them that often. So you have a fertile queen who, unlike other female bees, has a fully developed reproductive tract, which makes her abdomen bigger. That's because a queen in its larval stage, or a larva that the bees decide is going to become a queen, is fed a special treat called royal jelly throughout its development. This is secreted by nurse bees. It's a high-protein substance that allows the queen to develop completely.
Other female bees are only fed the royal jelly for the first 3 days of their larval development. And after that, they are just given pollen and nectar like all regular bees. So they grow into worker bees who fill a variety of roles in the hive. They will nurse, they will forage, and even patrol to identify illicit activity, in the form, for instance, of a renegade fertile worker bee giving birth to her own eggs.
It's time for a joke.
Oh, yes, it's time for a joke. I was lost in my papers. Okay, Martha. Do you know what bees say when they return to the hive after foraging?
Hey, guys. No, that's okay.
They say, "Honey, I'm home."
Oh, it wasn't far.
It was not fun.
Okay. Well, they don't actually say much, but, and this is a total accident that this works out in the text,
yes.
But they do communicate. The female foragers of all species in the Apis genre, as well as those of the Mayan Melipona bees, all use a form of communication called the waggle dance. The forager enters the hive, unloads its haul, and then starts to do this little number where it walks in a circle or does this little wiggle. And then you have all the bees all around it kind of more or less paying attention or just doing their own thing.
Martin is moving his arms frenetically.
Wiggling. So some scientists believe they are actually indicating to other bees where the good nectar is, where there's a good haul. But it's difficult to actually test that. And so it's kind of still an open question. Scientists still aren't sure how much information is being transmitted through this dance, but an interesting detail I found was that it's possible for individuals of one species to learn the dance of another species. But this is within the Apis genre, genus. So that's for the females. And then there are also the males, or what are called drones. As far as scientists know, drones are mainly there for their sperm. When they mate with the queen, the effort actually kills them, which is a drag because they have to try to inseminate the queen in flight, meaning they pretty much have a single shot, which they better not miss.
Quite interestingly, antique, medieval, and early modern authors believed that the queen bee, which is not Beyoncé, was actually a king. Yes, the joke was in. So the queen was actually a king. Bartholomew, the Englishman who wrote in the 13th century a very, very famous encyclopedia called the Book of the Property of Things, explained that, and it's a long quote, that bees make among them a king. Bees love their king by kind love and defend him with full great defense and hold it honor and worship to perish for their king. And bees choose to their king him that is the most worthy and noble in highness and fairness and most clear in mindness, for that is chief virtue in a king. And also bees that are unobedient to the king, they deem themselves by their own doom for to die by the wound of their own sting. The obedience of bees is wonderful about the king, for when he passes forth, all the swarm in one cluster passes with him. So this excerpt sounds a bit surprising, maybe. Bees are not known for killing themselves if they disobey their king queen. Instead, the queen bee says something special to the disobedient bee. Martha, can you guess what it is?
No, I can't.
Beehive! Well, that's a secret joke.
That was pretty good. Bartholomew the Englishman's strange ethology of bees is really a metaphor or a parable of human societies. He praises certain qualities in kings, nobility, highness, fairness, clear-mindedness, and certain qualities in subjects, fealty, worship, obedience in that particular excerpt. Anyway.
Many books of natural philosophy from the antiquity and the medieval era are really reflections on and of human societies. Medieval authors praised the bee society because they saw there a mirror in which to examine their own society. Bees were kind of the perfect society. The bee society is a monarchy ruled by a king. They could not really envision a woman in that role. The bee society is populated by bee soldiers and bee workers who obey and work relentlessly for the common good.
I think that's our most philosophical end yet. So that's everything for today. We hope that the show was... I don't want to do this joke again.
The bee's knees!
The bee's knees. And that you enjoyed all the bees-based dad jokes. Bees, honey, and wax is a vast topic. We only scratched the surface. There is much to say about these insects and their interactions with humans.
Next week, we'll be we are too busy to do a show. Because these shows, maybe you don't realize it, but they take a long time to prepare. So we'll be back in 2 weeks to talk about pesticides. And we'll ask things like why bees are dying and what it means for the near future. So tune in next week at 2 p.m. on CGLO 1690 a.m. If you missed the first half hour, you'll miss the show. Let me come inside. I'm young and able to buzz all night long. I'm young and able to buzz all night long. Well, when you hear me buzzing, baby, some stinging is going on. Well, buzz a while. Sting it then. Well, I'm a king bee. Want you to be my queen.